Congress did what it had to do, minimally, to keep the government open, but its work is far from finished, even if it is scattering to the four corners for the remainder of the campaign. For an update post the averted shutdown, David Hawkins, the senior editor of Roll Call, talked with Tom Temin.
What was interesting to me that you've reported is that after that tremendously overwhelming override of President Obama's veto of the 9/11 bill to sue Saudi Arabia, they're already talking about amending it.
That's right. Both House Speaker Paul Ryan and Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell had dueling news conferences on either side of the Capitol right as the rank and file were scattering. And they both made clear that when Congress comes back for its lame duck session, which is supposed to start on the Monday after the election, both of them are open to trying to revisit this law. It seemed to those who were watching, you know, maybe just sort of what we could see in public, as though the Republican leadership essentially said, this is, we want to take advantage of an opportunity to override President Obama at least once in our times in office. This does have a huge amount of popularity right before the election, but we are already aware, say, it seems to be the signal, that this bill is overly broad and should be written when we come back, although they haven't yet signaled exactly how they would write it to constrain it in ways that the president would find acceptable.
Because in the meantime, Saudi Arabia is not too happy about it.
They are not. that would be an understatement. What they can, you know, there's nothing they can do about it except work behind the scenes while everybody else is out campaigning. Work with Senator Bob Corker, the Senate Foreign Relations Committee chairman, and some others to try and at least limit it. I don't think it's going to be undone. I don't think that Congress is going to repeal what it's just done. But they are open to trying to come up with something narrow. Now, that having been said, it took Congress, you know, the better part of September to come up with what was essentially a true stopgap, kick the can down the road kind of a bill. There's no real reason to expect that come the middle of November they will suddenly be in great big deal cutting mood.
And anyway, getting back to that bill, you wonder how much practical effect it would really have. If someone sues Saudi Arabia, it could take 20, or sues any country, it could take 20 years of litigation, and they would probably never see a dollar in their lifetimes.
That is true. I think what is, it's also the case, however, that the notion is that if we, the United States, are going to back away from this longstanding legal notion that countries can't sue one another, that people in one country can't sue people in another country, that other countries could go after the people that we have on the ground there, i.e. soldiers in the Middle East, and that we could, that other countries could make our American lives pretty uncomfortable while this bill is in its current broad form.
Now, we did avert a government shutdown, as you said, and that brings up the idea of the budget process itself. And now there's one Republican senator who would like to see a total overhaul of what we've all come to see as the budget process that exists only in ideal, but not in reality.
That's right. So it, just to remind one another, this is now the 20th consecutive year when the budget process did not work as designed, which is to say that there would be all the appropriations bills would be enacted by the start of the new fiscal year, which was on October 1st. The Senator David Perdue, a freshman Republican senator from North Carolina, a former corporate takeover expert, he ran both the Dollar Store and Reebok at different times before getting into politics and getting himself elected to the Senate. He's on the Senate Budget Committee as a first-termer. He says that Congress clearly doesn't have the bandwidth to pass all the appropriations bills every year and do the oversight and authorization work that they're supposed to do. So his view is, let's combine the two and have the same people who oversee and authorize federal programs and agencies also spend the money. This is a radical departure from both status quo and from what most people who think the budget process needs to be rewritten have said. Most people up to this point have said the opposite of what Mr. Perdue is saying. They've said, let's have a two-year budget cycle in which Congress does oversight and thinks about policies in 1 year and then comes back in the second year and actually writes the appropriation bills that spend the money in the second year. So it's a pretty radical idea. He's not entirely alone, Mr. Perdue. He has some support from some other freshman Republicans. This is not going to happen this year, but it does suggest that the Republicans who are new to the Senate, who are new to the folk ways of Congress and the inability to get things done in a regular way are starting to get agitated, and sooner or later they'll have the power to make it happen.
We're speaking with David Hawkins, senior editor at Roll Call, and I don't think the founding fathers put into the Constitution that you have to have an authorization bill and a funding bill separately. That's something that only goes back to the 70s, correct?
That is exactly right. This is a law that was written after in the Watergate years. This Budget Act was enacted in 1974 to set up this sort of bifurcated system. It's not a holy writ. It's not written in the Constitution. It's not something that Franklin Roosevelt or Teddy Roosevelt or Abraham Lincoln or any of those were familiar with. This is a relatively modern construct, which is clearly, you know, it's not a subjective thing to say. The thing is clearly not working because it hasn't happened as the law says it's supposed to happen now for 20 years.
And also, you were writing in your own column that there are still plenty of things to talk about in the next Clinton-Trump debate, if those of us that listen to at least part of that whole thing can have the nerve to take our earplugs out for the next one. What's your thought of what they could talk about?
Well, of course, you know, you begin with all of the pokings that each candidate kind of holstered for the first time out. I mean, it was kind of amazing to many of us that Mrs. Clinton did not say in as tart ways as she said in the past how she views Mr. Trump as totally unqualified to be president. Mr. Trump, for his part, kept in his holster, he never used the word crooked. He never brought up the Benghazi investigation. He never brought up the Clinton Foundation. And he never most famously decided, he says, against bringing up some connection between Hillary Clinton and her husband's personal life. So all that sort of personal stuff aside, there's actually real policy stuff that they haven't discussed either. Amazingly to me, Donald Trump never brought up immigration. Mrs. Clinton didn't ask him to explain how he would finance a multi-billion-dollar wall with Mexico, or alternatively, how he would somehow persuade the Mexican government to pay for it. Mr. Trump, for his part, has not, I think, fully taken advantage of his ability to describe Hillary Clinton as a big government, big taxing liberal. He sort of let her get away with saying that the rich will pay more, but not quite explaining how much more. They didn't talk about climate change. They didn't talk about the Supreme Court. They didn't talk about campaign finance.